Is it really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
Welcome to Monday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. I hope you had a great weekend, and we've got a great week coming up. Jen DeSalvo said in the news, I don't know if you were listening to closely, but she talked about what's going on at Lake Point Tower and how that condo association has now sort of made it apparently how they can never be bought out and turned apartment. It started as, I think, the tallest apartment building in the country, then went condo. But there have been reports about how there are people trying to buy up the units and then maybe reverted back to apartments. Well, the condo board says they found a way to stop that. Joanne O'Brien is the president of the Lake Point Condominium Association, and she'll join us a little bit later to talk about that and about that sort of growing movement around the city. But I'd like to start on Mondays with the folks from Chicago Inno. Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke are in the studio. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, hey, Steve.
Okay, so, you know, we've talked on this. Chicago Inno is, there are several Innos around the country, right? Chicago is a very nice one. The first one was Boston.
That's right.
Catherine, you were out of Boston last week.
Yep.
There's one in Wisconsin.
That's right.
And there's one in the Twin Cities, right?
There are. So actually, we have 14 Innos kind of across the country right now. Chicago was the third that launched about 5.5 years ago after Boston and D.C. And now we're covering local tech and innovation in 14 markets across the country.
I bring it up because there was a study by the VC firm M25 that looked at Midwest cities when it comes to their startup climate?
That's right. So M25, very active angel investor, seed investor here in the Midwest and kind of investing, you know, throughout Chicago where they're based, but also in places like Minneapolis and St. Louis and kind of taking a look at startup ecosystems around the Midwest. And just last week came out with a new ranking of kind of the top 54 startup cities throughout the region.
And Chicago runs away with it.
It does. So Chicago kind of is the number one startup ecosystem for the last 3 years they've been doing this report.
Okay. And number two was the Twin Cities in Minneapolis. And I know, Catherine, you spend time up there as well.
That's right.
and number two by a long shot, right? No one else comes close to them.
Yeah. You know, the report actually said that if it weren't for Chicago, Minneapolis would firmly be in first place just because, you know, they have a lot of those attributes that make for a good startup ecosystem. There's plenty of companies. There's access to capital and universities that help kind of spur in the new generation
of entrepreneurs. It seems like schools, universities has a lot to do with who's on this list.
Absolutely. And that's been a big factor in companies that have risen in the ranks of this list, too, over the last 3 years. Madison, you know, was 10 last year. They're 7 this year. Ann Arbor also in the top 10. Columbus in the top 10. Even kind of smaller cities, you know, Lafayette, you know, kind of raising within the rankings.
Right. And so Pittsburgh is 3, Indianapolis 4, then St. Louis and Ann Arbor. Pittsburgh's, I guess, a school city as well.
Exactly. And Pittsburgh, you know, really kind of in the cities that we're kind of aware of in this region, I mean, one of the most underrated tech hubs, I think. You know, Uber had a huge presence there with its driverless car technology. Carnegie Mellon is a big booster of tech there, kind of increasing the tech talent in that city. Pittsburgh really doing a lot of really interesting things, especially as it comes to creating its own startups, but also sort of being a hub for these other companies, to larger tech companies, to kind of lay down roots.
So you talked about how universities are, how there's been some jumping, Madison moving up a little bit. Is this a fairly static list, though, overall? Or are there cities making moves?
Nothing was, you know, massive up and down. I think one thing that's clear, you know, that, you know, we talked to the M25 team who kind of put this together, and what it clearly shows is that, you know, some cities are getting lapped, right? Like there are cities that aren't kind of rising enough.
Because I was surprised to see Columbus. I thought Columbus was going to be higher than it was. Mm-hmm. I keep hearing great things about Columbus.
There are a lot of great things about Columbus, and the M25 folks kind of really mentioned that, you know, all of those Ohio cities kind of can go back and forth depending on a big outcome, right? So a big tech exit could swing Columbus, you know, higher than Cincinnati and higher than Cleveland. And so, you know, really those three cities are very close. And all just kind of shows you the power of that state, right? That there are kind of three separate tech hubs in there that can really produce, you know, really interesting tech ecosystems.
So, okay. So then that brings us back to Illinois. Chicago's number one. They're talking about 50 cities in the Midwest. So we're going as far east as Pittsburgh, obviously. We went west to St. Louis. I don't know how much further west, Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. And there are six Illinois cities on this list of the top 50?
That's right. So Champaign would be the next, coming in at number 16.
I keep hearing terrible things about this state. How can that? No, but I mean it. I mean, I'm kind of surprised that over 10% of the cities on this list are Illinois cities.
That's right. Well, you know, one thing is you take a look at Champaign. Obviously, the university down there is a huge catalyst for tech and startups. Lots of you know, the tech talent sort of very infamously leaves that area, whether it's, right. And it doesn't all come to Chicago, but so a great deal of it does stay in the area, does create new businesses down there. And so Champaign, you know, cracking the top 16, you know, is kind of a testament to the work that's happening at the University of Illinois.
We got Bloomington, which I'm assuming is ISU, and mm-hmm. there are some big businesses headquartered in Bloomington. Then Rockford at 49, which was a surprise, and Springfield at 50.
That's right.
Is there a lot going on in Springfield when it comes to startups?
That's a great question. And, you know, one thing that, you know, we have to plug into a little bit more is kind of that continued downstate innovation. You know, we covered a bit of the scene in Peoria recently. Peoria comes in this list at number 36. And, you know, there's quite a bit of budding activity kind of happening down there as well. So I'm not exactly sure who the movers and shakers right. are in Springfield, but clearly there's definitely enough activity for them to pop up in the top 50.
Hey, Illinois, pat on the back. I think you're doing pretty well yeah. when it comes to the top 50. Okay. Catherine, I saw a story, I think it was in the Tribune maybe, about how more and more bars are offering designer non-alcoholic cocktails because millennials, or not millennials, but the younger generation, they don't drink the way we older people do, but you still want to go out and pretend like you're having a cocktail, I guess. And now you write this story about this beverage company called Ritual, and they're developing booze that comes without the kick.
Exactly. Right? Well, it's not real. It's not booze, but they claim it still has a kick.
So it's a booze-like alcohol, but it doesn't have. No, it's
zero proof, so it's non-alcoholic
okay.
spirits.
Okay.
They're making gin and whiskey, and you know they make these using individually distilled botanicals. And the founder was telling me that you know his spirits still simulate the taste, smell, and burning sensation of real liquor.
Okay, so do they take the liquor out, or is this they come from a whole different area?
Yeah, so it's not liquor that they've taken the alcohol out okay. of. This is like completely made from scratch, out of botanicals. And he wouldn't really go into much deeper depth. He said, you know, he can't give away his secret recipe.
But I love the fact that, in fact, I talked about it at the top of the show, that the hardest part for this company wasn't recreating the flavors, but it was the feel. It was coming up with the burn.
Exactly.
So if you're drinking gin straight, you get that little burn in the back of your throat or a martini. And they replicated that. They didn't tell you how they did that?
No, he wouldn't reveal a secret recipe. But, you know, this company kind of joins a growing number of beverage startups here in Chicago. You know, there's some other ones like Poppy Lou, which is making kind of a healthier lemonade. And then also Tempo, which is making a low-caffeine sparkling tea beverage. So, you know, this is just some kind of activity that we've been seeing recently here
Have
in Chicago.
Have you noticed? I think I don't know how old the two of you are, but I think you're the youngest of us at the room. That there is a less of a drinking scene? Like people are still going out and not drinking cocktails, or you haven't seen that?
I think I've seen that. I mean, you know, even just from my own experience, you know, I think I'm more cognizant of how much I'm drinking and right. when I'm drinking than at least I used to be older generations.
Jim just came from a bachelor party this weekend. So.
Yeah, I don't know if I can comment specifically on the not drinking part. But, you know, I kind of like the name Ritual because, you know, the founder talked about, you know, it's the ritual of making the cocktail, right? Lots of people, even if you don't want to drink an alcoholic beverage, there's still something very cool about kind of making an old fashioned or, you know, there's a lot of ritual that goes into kind of creating craft cocktails. And so this company still allows you to make an interesting whiskey drink without actually having to drink the alcohol.
You know, I'm so glad you brought that up because Catherine wrote the article, but it was an interesting thing. The creator was a drinker or is a drinker, and he wanted to back off from it, so that's what led him to it. And then he found out really that it wasn't the alcohol part of it, it was the ritual of making the drinks. And you can buy their cocktails at Second City?
Yeah, you can get cocktails made with their spirit at Second City. You can buy it on Amazon or Binny's and then kind of select high-end liquor stores around the city.
And so it's they have whiskey or
gin.
Okay, a ritual if you're interested. Okay, Jim wrote a story about a startup to help people with OCD. It's called, I think, NoCD. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so it's the letters NOCD. That's the company. And they just raised $4 million last week. So a nice little Series A round for kind of an interesting healthcare technology business. And they're a mental health app that does a few things. One, it connects people who have OCD to a one-on-one video chat with a doctor who can kind of like walk you through your symptoms with a therapist and kind of talk to you about your condition and help give you some helpful tips and sort of work with you kind of on a one-on-one video basis. The other piece of kind of what they do is they open up their app to a community of people who have OCD. So it's helping people connect with others who sort of deal with the same condition.
So is it basically a support group or is it a piece of treatment?
So it's both. So okay. That's kind of the two pieces of it. So one is a support group, kind of connecting people who maybe can share some of their helpful tips, things they've gone through. Just, you know, being able to kind of tell your story is a pretty impactful thing for people who are going with living with OCD. And so, you know, the big piece of their project is that. The second is the one-on-one doctor and therapist connection too. And so being able to kind of work with somebody one-on-one, track their progress and continue to kind of see how they're dealing with their condition.
Are they up and running?
They are up and running. Okay. So on the kind of community side, they have 130,000 members across 90 countries. So the community Wow. part of what they've done has really kind of grown. The next sort of phase for them is to really grow out the doctor, the one-on-one medical professional side.
Well, it seems to me then, so if you're just sort of trying to figure yourself out and are a little concerned about or think you might be on this path, this is a way to find out from other people, right, and to see what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, being able to kind of connect with people who are going through the same thing that you're going through, or could, you know, offer different advice and tips, that's really important for kind of any community right. that's kind of going through something like
but
this,
especially something that might have a little bit of a stigma too. You know, you can find it's an easier way to find some answers.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Not that it should have a stigma, obviously. How is this guy who has OCD himself, who came up with the idea, how is he making money?
So the money is going to come from the doctor side. Sorry, so kind of working with medical organizations who can kind of connect and sort of use this app with their patients. And so I believe it's kind of free on the user side, and then they're going to make it on the kind of the B2B angle.
I love when you guys come in because I just like the idea of talking about new businesses and new ideas that, you know, a lot of us sit at home and listen and say, oh, I have an idea for a business, and then you don't always follow through on that. But there, another one, MBORO, it is something that would help women or couples, people, men, with fertility issues, right?
That's right. So MBORO, they're a new Chicago startup. And basically what they're aiming to do is provide financial, emotional, and educational resources to, you know, couples that are looking to conceive. You know, the interesting thing about kind of the in vitro or the fertility space is that a lot of times it isn't covered fully by insurance. So, you know, women kind of need the financial support that this startup wants to offer.
And so they would offer lower interest loans for treatment, or how does that work?
Yeah, so sort of like a lending tree like investment model where, you know, investors will finance loans for individuals and the couples can borrow that money and it can be used for fertility assistance.
Yeah, and you know, as we kind of just mentioned about the NOCD, I mean, what they are able to do also is open up this community of people who are dealing with infertility. So yes, it is the financing piece of it, which is super helpful because, you know, a round of IVF can cost over $20,000 out of pocket. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't have insurance coverage, it's going to be very difficult to do that. So obviously the financing is one thing, but the other piece is the community, right? It's connecting women to other women who have gone through this and can kind of provide some helpful tips and some advice along the way.
Last week we talked about the group of women trying to form a bank. I think it was called First Women's Bank, something to that effect. And, you know, I think there's a fine line between filling a need and using gender as a marketing tool. And I'm not sure exactly where that fits. But that question came to mind when I was reading your story, Catherine, about Cloche. That's sort of a savings plan or app, but geared toward just women.
That's right. So Cloche Invest, another new Chicago startup coming out of 1871, and they've kind of built the investing platform for women. So basically how they're saying they're doing that exactly is offering, you know, investment portfolios that support women-owned businesses or invest in companies, you know, that have a good representation of women, of women workforce or women on the board.
But men could invest in that too, right? If they've got a nice turnaround, I would imagine.
Yeah. Okay. Men could definitely use Cloche if they wanted to.
Well, I think I do want to, Catherine. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, good for you.
Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno. Make sure you check out the Inno Minute every morning on the opening bell right around 5:25. Thanks for coming by, guys.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. You know, Dennis Rodkin comes by from time to time. He writes about personal real estate for Crane Chicago Business. And one of the stories that we've really been talking about over the past, well, probably a number of them. One is the great influx now of new apartment buildings, but the other has been of existing condo buildings and the pressure that they've been under to convert, to go back to apartment buildings. One of the buildings that we've been talking to, probably more than any other, has been Lake Point Tower, where there have been a couple of efforts to move in. Lake Point Tower's board of directors for the condo association have passed a couple of measures that they think will thwart that. The president of the condo association is Joanne O'Brien, and she joins us on a phone line now. Joanne, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you. Thank you. We're so glad to be part of this and to be able to tell our part of the story.
Okay, so tell me about it. I mean, look, as a kid growing up and going to Wrigley Field, you know, I'd go around the S-curve and I would always look up and see Lake Point Tower. I mean, it has been a distinct part of the city since it was built in 1969. I think I read earlier that it was at one time the tallest apartment building in the country. Then, of course, it went condo in the mid-80s.
And yes.
And you've been there more than 30 years yourself.
I have. I'm a 31-year resident. And I, as you have, always looked at this iconic building and thought, I'd like to live there someday. And it's been such a pleasure being here for 31 years.
Okay, so it's come under, well, I'll use the word attack. Attack, you know, depends on your point of view, obviously. But there have been a couple of efforts in the past year or so to buy up properties in an effort, apparently, to make it apartments again. Is that a fair assessment?
That's correct. It is a very fair assessment. It was totally unwelcome, unwanted. We felt these overtures were predatory, and the residents were enraged at the attack on our building.
Now, one of the people who staged the first attack is the guy who built it in the first place, right? Is it Nick Gouletis? Was, I think, the developer of Lake Point Tower, or he was the one who helped make it go condo in the 80s, and now he was coming back to try to turn it into apartments.
Absolutely. One of our residents said he has seller's remorse. He wants the building back, but the residents are vehemently opposed to that. This is a community. It's a home. People want to live here for years to come.
But he went in with the idea of buying up to 100 units, right?
The first overture was 100 to 200 units. Okay. And then we knew at that point that we had to take some action to prevent that.
Okay, so there's salvo number one, and then comes salvo number two, where there was a proposed buyer or a group of investors sending letters to owners trying to buy it up. And I don't know, did you ever figure out who those people were?
We have two names. We don't know if they themselves took the initiative or if there's somebody behind them. At any rate, we weren't going to take any chances.
So what is it that the board did?
Well, the first initiative was to pass an amendment that would limit the rentals to 25% of the building. Once that was passed, we initiated a second amendment that limits the ownership to any entity, single person, affiliate, to 2% of the building.
So the idea is if you limit it to 25% of the building when it comes to rentals, you can't have someone buying up the condos and then renting them out to other people. They would have to actually live in the condo, and they couldn't live in 150 condos at once, so that would stop that hostile takeover.
Exactly. And then, you know, with 2% ownership, that would limit someone to essentially maybe 15 units at the most.
Now, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And right now, I think nobody owns more than eight units.
Okay. So, Joanne, you're the boss here when it comes to the condo association. And obviously, you needed, I'm assuming, some sort of supermajority to pass these rules?
Exactly. And we did get that supermajority. For the 2% amendment, we got 72.5 in about 2.5 weeks. That's how vehemently opposed the owners were.
But you hear from everyone, I would imagine, and is everyone on board with this, or were there others that maybe might have been interested in selling to someone who wants to make it an apartment building?
Well, there was about 1% that said no.
Have you stopped talking to them?
Absolutely not. We're open. We're talking to everybody. We don't know what their reasoning was, and they might have had good reasons. But the majority of the people here want to protect their home and their property. The residents now are so relieved and thankful that their neighbors banded together.
Okay, but help me out with this, Joanne, because you've done these things, but it could still happen, right? I mean, if a supermajority, I know that the threshold has changed at the city council, but if a supermajority votes that they do want to convert to an apartment, that is something that could still happen, couldn't it?
It's possible, not too likely, but anything is possible. But as long as the residents are still in this mood, it's not going to happen.
It certainly is much more difficult with this. And now I know the River City condo complex is one we talked about. That's maybe the biggest one that's converted to apartments. But you've been watching these buildings sort of being ticked off one by one, haven't you?
Absolutely. And that's why the minute we got an inkling of this, we took action.
And so so this should fend things off. Have you communicated this to the would-be buyers, or there's no sense in telling them? They probably already know, or they'll find out on their own.
Well, I personally have. The people who have contacted me in no uncertain terms have told them. I'm not only not interested, but the residents that I represent are not interested. Some of them persist in sending out solicitations, and it's up, I guess, to the unit owners to make their voice known individually as well as our community communications.
Lake Point Tower, you know, it's funny because it's off on its own, and yet the community, and I'm going to say the neighborhood around Lake Point Tower has, you tell me, but it seems like it's undergone just a complete transformation in the past 20, 25 years.
Oh, it absolutely has. It's a wonderful neighborhood. It's a great place to be part of.
And you're going to be for a long time to come.
I hope so.
Joanne O'Brien, the president of the Lake Point Tower Condominium Association. Thanks for talking to us today. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Former Sears employees, this update's for you. The floundering department store is now settling up with the former employees who purchased a life insurance plan who passed after the company filed for bankruptcy. This could affect nearly 29,000 retired Sears employees, and they've put aside a $3 million fund to help compensate those who need the benefits of their life insurance policies. It was not a surprise that this was going to be an issue for the company when they went through the process, because if you're paying all your money to lawyers, investors, and government, then there's not going to be much left behind for other stuff. But they're trying to not let everybody feel left behind. But Chicago may have felt a little left behind after the world's 50 best bars rankings were released, and Chicago didn't even make the list. We made the top 100, though. But the only Chicago spots that made the list was Lost Lake in Logan Square and the Aviary in Fulton Market. So as winter barrels its way into our lives again, these could be two fun spots to check out if you've never been before. Maybe we need a drink more to get higher up on that list. No, probably not. I'm Bennett Wake Knight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. Amy Guth is in the studio, the host of The Daily Gist from Crane Chicago Business, and here on WGN Radio, a podcast that you should listen to. Oh, Amy, I love this story.
Oh, this is such an interesting story, right? Because it seems like such an innocuous thing. It is about... There's one piece of paper in this digital age that we are very attached to, and that is the printed receipt.
So do you want your receipt? And people take it.
People, I think we're just programmed to go, yeah, of course I do.
I don't think we're trained to keep it or inclined to keep it. I don't want an emailed receipt because I know that the companies are going
to
do
they'll
do a lot more with that email address than just send me the receipt.
That's right.
So I was just at a big box store yesterday, and they always ask, do you want an emailed receipt? I will never say yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's one reason. But so why else is it that we keep taking these paper receipts?
So this interesting drama is playing out. And I should say, you know, why this is relevant right now is because there was a survey recently just kind of looking at, hey, how attached are we to receipts? We in the U.S., we are the most attached than
really?
Any other country. We enjoy our paper receipts for sure. But this is playing out through two different organizations. One is called Choose Paper. They're based here. They're saying, you know what? It actually doesn't really make up for that much deforestation. We're not talking about bajillions and bajillions of trees.
Okay.
Then there's another group called Green America that's saying, oh no, it's paper and this is a thing that usually gets wadded up in our pockets and thrown out.
So wait, so the first group that doesn't love trees, are they in favor of dumping the receipt too?
But they're really kind of pushing on the data privacy angle. You know, they're saying, okay, hey, people don't really like to give up their email address
right.
and their personal data, but you still need, you know, proof that you purchased it. And if you need to make a return or something like that, people like paper. Hang on to paper.
So and I don't know that they could do this. Well, I'm sure they could do this. They can do anything. But don't print the damn receipt unless I tell you I want it.
And that's kind of how some retailers are approaching this. So Green America is targeting about 36 retailers, you know, big name retailers to try to adopt electronic receipts, though a lot of them already kind of give you an option, right? Some of them already don't at all.
Right.
Some will give you the option, things like that. So there, I think that's what we're trying to move towards a little bit. But, you know, this kind of fuels some legislative efforts that happened in California earlier this year that try to ban paper receipts unless the consumer specifically asks for one. It did not quite work.
Why not?
It went to the voters, didn't quite work out. I think because a lot of this playing out,
oh,
right?
I see. There's so it was a referendum and they didn't
approve
right.
it. Yeah, that's right. And it was called, I thought it was a catchy little name. It was called Skip the Slip.
Well, aside from the trees, apparently, even if you do or do not love the trees, there's just the litter and the clutter and the,
oh,
you know,
so
I won't name the store, but I go to one store.
We all know that one receipt that's 5 miles long.
It's not just 5 miles long. They print out 16 coupons.
Yes.
And all that
so
stuff.
Much.
I will never use one of the coupons. I will never use a coupon that they print. And yet every time I leave, I walk out with 4 or 5 pieces of paper.
Absolutely.
All right.
I know someone who was that receipt for Halloween 1 year.
I like that. listen to more about that in the other day's news stories on The Daily Gist. It's a podcast. You should subscribe. It'll drop about an hour or so from now.
Yeah.
And the host is Amy Guth. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks so much.